Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another special edition of the Four Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, the 2019 CONCACAF Gold Cup USA postgame show, the United States in Cleveland, Ohio at First Energy Field. Destroy, take out, demolish Trinidad and Tobago by a final of 6-0. 6-0. And once again, for the United States, what happened? They finally got their act together. They were able to go out there from the opening whistle, and they were able to play their game a little haphazard at times, but at the end of the evening, Chris, the United States got it done. I am with, once again, the coach, Chris Gluck, and your opening thoughts after that 90-minute performance.
Well, I think it's a great result. And that's the type of, at least the second half, is the type of result we should see against just about every nation outside of maybe Mexico and Jamaica. A long time coming. I won't, Daniel, go so far as to say it's a redemption of the failure in the World Cup. The only way they can redeem themselves from that failure is to beat TNT in the next round of the World Cup. A great result, and right off the top, Giassi Zardes, he finished, and he finished well. Great for Giassi. He got 2 goals. I'd love to see that.
Listen, we love to see our guys, strikers, you know, midfielders, the attacking players, pardon me, to go out there and do the job that they're supposed to do. And finally, Zardes did not use his face to put the ball in the back of the net. He finally used his feet, and, you know, he was in great position to put the balls in the back of the net, and he did it twice. Unbelievable result tonight for him on how this national team finally, you know, once they started going, then they're unstoppable, and it was just brilliant to watch. And let me just say this as well, Chris. I want to pick up on what you just said. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not the revenge match that we've been looking for, nor is this the revenge match we should be expecting. Chris is correct. The next time the United States is going to be taking on Trinidad and Tobago, either in the semifinal round of World Cup qualifying or in the hex of World Cup qualifying, that type of display must be shown down in the Caribbean on Trinidad and Tobago, and they must, and I stress this, they must put them away the way that they have in this one. We all know that World Cup qualifying in CONCACAF is probably the most hardest qualifying cycle in this part of the region, but it does not compare to what those nations in South America go through each and every week when you are facing off against top quality sides like an Argentina, like a Brazil, like a Colombia, like an Uruguay, and now you can say Chile as well. You have several strong sides, and you have tons of minnows. And Trinidad Tobago was once, and let me just say this, Chris, Trinidad Tobago was once a powerful side. Now they've regressed into a minnow. Sure, they got their revenge on the Paul Caligiuri moment. But the U.S. must go down to Port of Spain, anywhere they want to go, in Trinidad Tobago, any field, any stadium in Trinidad and Tobago, and they have to put on that type of performance in the Gold Cup like they should have done down in Trinidad in the end of October in 2017 on the final day of World Cup qualifying in the Hex. If this team that showed plenty of heart had at least half that heart down in Trinidad, Chris, we would not be complaining about this, and we would not be talking about how they need to find a redemption match against Trinidad.
No, you're absolutely right, Daniel. And here's what I would say, at least for now, for this second half. Again, I mean, the first half, I'll probably touch on it a bit later. But to me, this game really reinforces just how bad the leadership was under the previous group, if you will. That's how I would – that would be my take on this. It doesn't redeem the result. It just reinforces how bad the previous leadership was. But, you know, from an overall footballing standpoint, my take on the game was there was less predictability, because we talked about this in the previous game. There was far less predictability in moving the ball forward this game. I saw a lot of ball movement through the middle of the pitch, both inside and outside, outside and outside, or outside than inside. And that's the type of threat that you need to have in order to mitigate a defensive team that becomes an attacking team with the ball in possession. I hope that makes sense. I think the more that Pulisic, McKennie, and Areola and Boyd play together, I think the stronger we're going to see them attain that target that Berhalter gave them in the second half. He said they needed to make better use of creating more space. And that's what they did in the second half. They had less than half of the number of inaccurate penetrations in the second half that they did the first half. And they had four times as many accurate placements, creation of chances in the second half than they did the first half. Kudos to Berhalter for a great halftime talk, maybe?
I'll take it. Let me just say this as well, Chris. You know, while I agree with you about the first half, pardon me, I agree that I felt that while I thought they attacked well, times in the first half, the fluidity of the crosses were not good enough. I felt that the fluidity of the crosses did not make their mark. And obviously, you know, look, is it to shake off some nerves? There's probably some nerves because, you know, look, I think you have to admit that there are times when you are facing like I said before, Trinidad Tobago was once a power, now they're a minnow. And, you know, when they are putting out this roster and they're going to try and counter, and they almost succeeded on the counter one or two times in the first half, know, but thank goodness for Zach Steffen, who finally had a better night at goalkeeping than he had in the two friendlies against Jamaica and against Venezuela. You have to say that finally Zach Steffen, you know, got it in his ear. He said, look, don't mess around. Don't assume you have it all planned, and next thing you know, you're just giving the opposition a free shot. You can't let that happen as a young goalkeeper, especially a goalkeeper where many have said, and I've said this myself about Zach Steffen, He is the future starting goalkeeper for the U.S. men's national team. I believe that he is the heir apparent to take over for Tim Howard now. Not saying that no one else can do it, but in my mind, I believe that Zach Steffen is the quality goalkeeper for the national team that we've been looking for. It's not just because Berhalter managed him in Columbus. It's just that you see the qualities that he has that can translate from league play into the international game. And that's where I think Zach Steffen finally now grew up. Those two matches in the friendlies in May, finally, you're seeing now why he's chosen to play for the U.S. men's national team. And in this game, I think now he's finally growing up. Is there still more work to be done? Absolutely. But I feel that Zach Steffen right now, Chris, has now grown up. He's improved on his line. And in my book, that's why he is the future as the goalkeeper, starting goalkeeper of this U.S. men's national team.
Agree 100%. Nobody, for me, comes to mind that could even come close to threatening him. From the standpoint of watching the game on telly, it looks to me like he has confidence in every single move that he makes on the pitch. You can't really know for sure because you're not there and you don't train him every single day. But, you know, you can see Areola's confidence has got better and he's getting better touches on the ball and he's running and dribbling and turning much better. He's creating his own space. Now, I think we've talked in the past, probably 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, maybe even did Areola play in 2014? I can't remember. The thing that concerned me about him was his first touch. And, You know, a lot of people poo-pooed Wayne Rooney coming over. And I think that with Wayne Rooney coming over, that's a great example of how a player that plays at the very highest level can rub off onto a player that hasn't played at the very highest level successfully. I think Areola has matured, and that's a good thing. Zach Steffen, like the Americans have always been known for having pretty good goalkeepers. Brad Friedel comes to mind, Casey Keller comes to mind, Tim Howard comes to mind. There was another one, I think, whose name escapes me, but maybe there wasn't. To me, I'm just really pleased for the guys that they were able to get a result that was a dominant result. But you know me.
Me too.
I'm never satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, so I'm looking at the overall numbers, and, you know, okay, some people like numbers, some people don't. But in tracking the Premier League, the Bundesliga, the La Liga, the UEFA Champions League, previous World Cup winners, the Americans had 66% possession, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Their number of passes was just over 500. Okay? So to be at the elite at the world level, those passes need to be 700 per game, not 500 when you're playing a minnow.
Right.
The second half, I think it was clear to everybody. They were passing the ball quickly, moving the ball quickly. They were retaining possession when they were doing it for the majority of the time. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the type of football that you would expect to see in the first half as well as the second half. Does that make sense?
No, it does make sense. Look, you want them to be a lot more lethal. You want them to be more precise. You want them to, like you've always said, Chris, possession with purpose. And while they did have possession with purpose, the truth is you want them to have more possession more purpose to go out there with the ball, what you're going to do with the ball, how you're going to attack, how you're going to go into the attacking third of the pitch and find a way to go out there. And, you know, look, obviously, look, six goals is great. The way they were playing in the second half, if they transferred that in the first half, they probably would have had at least 10 to 11 goals tonight. I mean, that's how clinical they were in the second half. If they were just a little bit better in the first half, then, you know, by all means, this would have been a complete blowout. A complete blowout, which it was anyway, but still, though, they would have had more goals in the first half than they did in the second half. You want to have a dominating performance. Why do you think, like you've said, why do you think the German national team has been like this for all these years? Why do you think they're so clinical? Why do you think they're so dominant, especially in World Cup qualifying? They never, ever lose a match in World Cup qualifying, the Germans do. If they lose, they lose because a team is either better than them or a certain team who's not better than them can figure them out and then they can sneak up on them and beat them on the day. But you really have to be good to beat a team like Germany. To me, they always find a way to get out of the group stage of the World Cup. They always qualify as the top nation in their qualifying group in Europe. They never lose a match. It's always a win. Maybe if there's a team that's, you know, either equal to them or just a hair below, we'll find a way to either draw or sneak in 3 points off of them. That's the only way that Germany could ever lose a match in World Cup qualifying in UEFA. Other than that, while this was a very good performance, an excellent second half, they did better in the second half than they did in the first half. The truth is that the United States did well. But can they do better? Absolutely. And I understand where you're coming from, Chris, because that's the situation where I think this U.S. men's national team can get better. And once again, this is now what? This is the sixth match under the influence of Greg Berhalter. And I think we can definitely say this. I think he abandoned his using the right fullback as a two-way player, which they're normally two-way, but, you know, the false two or the false five, I think, has been removed in this one. I think he just went straight out with a 4-1-4-1, flat 4-1-4-1, and he just told both Nick Lima and Tim Ream, just go up the flanks, attack with the ball, come back and defend. And that's what they did. And I really believe they did that perfectly well in this match.
Yes, I'd agree. There certainly wasn't the same movement with and without the ball this game. I mean, I think I touched on it earlier. There was a lot of ball movement in the middle of the pitch, even when it wasn't one from a high press or a turnover in a 1v1, if you will, a duel. There was ball movement on the right, in the middle, and in the left. I mean, I don't know what the exact percentages look like, but I would have thought it'd be pretty close to being roughly 30% across the board or 33% across the board. And that gets back to what I spoke to earlier, is you need to be unpredictable to be a better football club. You can't just play the ball down the wings all the time, like we saw in their first match. I mean, Zimmerman was playing the majority of the balls forward. And although Bradley got involved today more so, the thing that I thought was interesting was Zardes dropped a little bit deeper sometimes, as did McKennie. And when those guys do that, they draw the middle of the middle defenders of TNT up a little bit higher, which then gives more space on the wings for players that have a bit more speed, like Areola, like Pulisic, like Boyd. So the tactical change, using the same players, right? I mean, the same guys started. But let's not be overly zealous here. We mustn't forget, right, that it was TNT. Mm-hmm. And I think Jovan Jones is the only player on that squad that plays at a level of equivalence to the majority of the players on the U.S. side. I don't think they have anybody playing in Europe. So let's not be overzealous, but the critical thing is now he's got tape, he's got video, and he can drill it again and again and again. There was more triangular movement on the wings. There was good crossing movement throughout the middle of the pitch. Those are the things that he can show the players that says, this is what Bright looks like. Yeah? But if you play against a better defensive team that's more talented, you're not going to get the ball up there as quickly as you think. So I'm hopeful that maybe not against Panama, but against Mexico, he doesn't play the 4-1-4-1 or the 4-3-3 or however you want to color it. I'd like him to see I'd like to see him playing two midfielders in a bucket, 4-4-2, if you will, or maybe a 4-5-1, I guess. But I'd like to see, or the 4-2-3-1, I'd like to see two guys in the middle to open up the options in building from the back that you're going to need to have when you play against more talented football teams. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. No, it does. No, it does make sense. And I mean, you know, that's the one thing that we have to hope for is that they'll take this lesson that they put out there, how they're performed, and what they need to do is when you're getting deeper and deeper into the tournament, sooner rather than later, you're going to face Mexico. Obviously, the idea is to face them in the final and perform that way to go out there. And, you know, if they get there, of course, there's still one more match to go in the group stage still. And that is, of course, Panama this coming Wednesday night over at Children's Mercy Park, Sporting, at the home of Sporting Kansas City. Because as of right now, both sides have 6 points. Pardon me. The U.S. has a +6 differential lead on Panama, which is why they are top of the group right now. And, of course, you know, a win or a draw will keep the United States on top of Group D, and Panama needs to basically come out and beat the U.S. to take over the top spot, or else it will be the U.S.'s group to win, and then, you know, we'll have to wait and see who they'll face in the quarterfinals over at Lincoln Financial Field, which is, of course, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So we're just going to have to wait and watch to see what's going to happen there. But we're not going to go ahead of ourselves here. Let's just keep going with this one here, folks. You know, once again, Chris, it's a situation where this U.S. team, when they don't have the nerves jittering, they are doing great things. At the same time, let me say this. At the same time, you have to say that when you have a player like Christian Pulisic, and when he has the ball at his feet, and to see the footballing mind of a Pulisic that we have not had since Tab Ramos, and let's be honest with ourselves here, we've never had a great creative midfielder since Tab Ramos. Claudio Reyna had some moments. He can bring up the ball. He's done some things on free kicks. He can go out, you know, in and out, you know, on the pitch and do something great things. But I think, you know, no offense to Claudio Reyna, you know, he wasn't that, you know, creative midfielder, that true powerful 10 that can, you know, do some great things with the ball. I mean, was he a great passer? Yes. Did he dribble the ball well? Yes. Did he have a solid shot? Absolutely. Did he do a great job on free kicks? No doubt about it. But what you saw from Pulisic today, when he helped with a goal, I believe it was the second goal for Zardes, I believe it was. I have to quickly take a look, but
yes,
yep, it was the
it was.
The second goal. It was the second goal for Zardes in the 69th minute. What you saw from Pulisic, Chris, is this. He can change speeds while possessing the ball.
Yeah.
He can samba with the ball. If you saw that filthy mood, he provided towards the back end of this match. What he can do, not just, you know, score, not just, you know, deliver free kicks. He can definitely change his speed while dribbling with the ball. To see him perform like that is the reason why the future of this national team is still bright. It's still bright enough to say, you know what, if you have Christian Pulisic in the middle of the park or coming off the wings, you know for a fact he's going to be the guy to go out there, and he's definitely going to display what everyone knew what he can do, and that is absolutely brilliant.
Full stop. Absolutely, Daniel. Here's the two words that I've used over the last 5 or 6 years to describe exactly what you said. He has what I call gravitational pull, right? Where when
yes.
he has the ball, he pulls defenders to him. And when you have the capability to pull defenders to you, you are creating space for other players who sometimes aren't quite as talented. Yeah? Because
yep.
they can't make their own space. Now, this gets back to Pulisic. It gets back to McKinney. It's now getting back to Areola. And it certainly gets back to Boyd. I know Boyd didn't score today, but he made space on his own to rifle off, I think, 3 or 4 shots. And most of them were just wide. I don't think they were all on target. But when you have 3 or 4 players moving forward through the middle of the pitch that have gravitational pull, then you make the rest of the team that much better. And I think that's what we're seeing. You know, it's the Pulisic creates the Zardes, who finally, when he actually had space and time on the ball, he put the ball in the back of the net. So Pulisic has made Zardes better, as did Bradley and Lima. Lima put in a lovely cross, and Zardes was on top of it. And that's good. And Bradley made that space, right? Remember that? He pushed the ball
yep.
out to the
yep.
right wing from atop the 18-yard box, no more than, I think, 8 to 10 yards atop the 18-yard box. And we talked about this based upon the previous game. If you can't spray the ball from that position left to right, you're not making space for your teammates, right? You're just not.
Yep. No.
So that's where I'd kind of go with that. That with Pulisic, we got a player who's got gravitational pull. I'd like to see more of McKinney do the same thing. I mean, he played a wonderful through ball. Well, he probably played 4 or 5, but there was one that stood out to me in the second half. I don't think that
mm-hmm.
the men's team scored from it, but it was like, now that's exactly how you play the game. You do what McKinney just did. And, you know, granted, it's against TNT, but if they don't get the confidence to do what they need to do against the Minnows, then they're going to find it really hard going when it comes to Mexico or Jamaica, and probably even Panama. It's pleasant to see how that game. Now, there, I do have one cheeky comment. Long scoring the sixth goal from inside the 6-yard box on the run of play, right?
Right.
He scored the sixth goal in the run of the normal run of play from inside the 6-yard box. And he's a center back.
Yep.
I thought that was a bit cheeky for him to be in that position that late in the game.
That was fantastic.
But good for him.
That was just fantastic to watch. And, you know, I got to tell you, Pulisic has been fantastic. And you know what? We have to also say Tyler Boyd has been tremendous in these first two group stage matches as well. Pardon me. Tyler Boyd was just a revelation, to be honest. I mean, you know, obviously his coming out party was the friendly against Venezuela, and, you know, he didn't do much. But then, you know, when he's out there on the field in these two games, you know, obviously Guyana, you had to beat them 4-0. You know, this was a great victory today. But even though he didn't score, he had chances. And if it wasn't on frame, saved by the keeper, off the post, off the bar, if they were just off frame, he just missed by like a couple of inches here and there. I think what we are seeing now is this, is that we're seeing players coming out of nowhere, becoming a part of this national team, and they're taking their chances, they're taking their shots, and they are making a claim to be on this national team that no one expected them to do. And it's just been unbelievable to see what he has been able to accomplish in these three matches, the friendly against Venezuela. I know he was subbed into the match against Jamaica, but he really didn't do much. But I think he started to come out better against Venezuela, and look what he's done now. Two goals in two group stage matches so far in this Gold Cup for Tyler Boyd, and to see him just playing lights out, fantastic football for the national team. Finally, I think we're getting some players that are going to basically push out those. I mean, look, I think we all agree that some of those players that are down in Trinidad are never coming back. And if they do come back, it's more out of need than it is of, okay, we're just going to bring you back for the hell of it. I think you're seeing now like Tyler Boyd, Weston McKennie, we've seen since the beginning of this rebuild for the national team, is that McKennie has chutzpah. He has the ability to go out there. He has a chip on his shoulder. He's attacking. He's defending. He did not back down. Yes, he earned the yellow card on the handbags and five paces moment there. But still, Chris, you will see more of Weston McKennie, that's for sure. I can't wait to see when Tyler Adams finally comes to this national team. And the only way you're going to see both Michael Bradley and Tyler Adams on the same pitch in a starting 11, and I have to say it, and it has to be said, Tyler Adams is not a fullback. Michael Bradley must be pushed more into an offensive attacking role if you want to keep Pulisic as a left wing or a right wing midfielder. You must have Michael Bradley in the attacking part of the midfield, and you must allow Tyler Adams to be that number six that he has done so well for, not just for the New York Red Bulls, but for Red Bull Leipzig in the Bundesliga. Tyler Adams, Michael Bradley must be on the same pitch at the same time.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. I think Tyler Adams is going to unseat Bradley. Bradley doesn't have the pace anymore. I think if he gets consistently into the attacking half of the pitch, he's not going to have the legs to play box to box. So, and you can't not allow Pulisic. I mean, coaches do it all the time. They just put players into a formation, and they just do that. And all that is just eye candy for the press and the public. Pulisic played everywhere on the pitch. Boyd was on the left-hand side of the pitch just as much as the right at times. Areola was more centered on the left-hand side of the pitch. I didn't see him roam to the right.
Mm-hmm.
But McKennie was on the right as well as the left. I mean, I haven't looked at the chalkboard, and I'm not going to. But, you know, Bradley only penetrated the attacking third as a result of a restart or winning the ball through high press or a turnover, a 1v1 duel. So I think if Tyler Adams is going to play, and again, I don't know much about him, I think he would probably replace Bradley, which I would be okay with.
here's a question I got for you. Yep, go ahead.
Well, why wasn't Sebastian Legette selected?
Injury.
Was he like rumored to be, because he's in the starting 11 for the Galaxy against Cincinnati or somebody today?
Yeah, what happened was that he was supposed to be selected. He was supposed to be selected for this Gold Cup, but unfortunately, what happened was that he got injured before the friendlies against Venezuela and Jamaica. So he had to switch things up on the roster selection. That's why he's still with the Galaxy right now.
Oh, okay. Well, that to me, that's disappointing because I think if my
Oh, no,
serves...
it's very disappointing. Look, I agree. Listen, I want Legit to come back on the national team too. You know, that's the problem now with him. It's like, you know, he's injury prone at the moment, and hopefully he'll stop being injury prone and he'll be able to get on during, World Cup qualifying, because the truth is that he's been fantastic in the midfield. I really believe that Legit is a part of this national team as well. I agree with you. It's just unfortunate that it's injury that has prevented him right now, and hopefully with the next round of friendlies coming, we all know the CONCACAF Nations League tournament is coming very soon. He'll be hopefully be a part of the national team in September for those matches in the Nations League tournament, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, once again, if he's not injured, Chris, he's definitely on this national team, and, you know, he would be a part of this Gold Cup.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not sure if he's played in a sixth role before, but if McKennie, Pulisic, Areola, and Boyd continue to play as well as they've played, there's only two spots in that starting 11 that he could fit into, and I don't see him as a striker. So there's really only one spot that he could fit into. And if Tyler Adams is your man, you know, I find it kind of hard that Legit isn't going to be in unless he knows how to play fullback. I mean, the guy has notes, you can tell. There's just players, you know, Daniel, that they speak volumes. They look like they think on the pitch, like they play the game 10 feet above the pitch. Legit looks like he can play the game like he's 10 feet above the pitch. He just sees things. So tough selection there for Berhalter because Boyd is like, I think he's really supplanted himself. I hope he has as
so
a
do
starter.
I. So do I. So do I. I really think Tyler Boyd probably has pushed out Legit unless, you know, Boyd will get a break and you bring in Legit for maybe a couple of friendlies here and there. Maybe you bring him over as a bench player. Maybe what you do is maybe you split time with him, possibly. You'll have Boyd in as a starter for one match in qualifying, and then you'll have Leggett as the next guy to play in qualifying in the next match, whether it be home or away, depending on what the schedule sets up for. Pardon me. But, Tyler Boyd, this is what happens when you take advantage of the position that has been handed to you. And once again, Tyler Boyd is showing maybe why he's going to take over for Leggett, or if Leggett does come in, who knows, maybe Areola, maybe he gets a break, maybe he goes out there and gets a break, and here comes Leggett on the left side while you have Boyd on the right and vice versa. So it's been some wonderful moments. Let me get your thoughts, though, on Aaron Long. What have you seen from the center back that you like from this game? And, I mean, I've seen him many, many times with the New York Red Bulls, obviously. This is the first time he's ever scored, in my opinion. I think this is the first time he's ever scored two goals in a single match. He's scored two goals in one match. He opens the scoring. He closes the scoring in this one. And you're seeing a center back that, you know, has tremendous ability on run-back defense, tremendous ability with his height. He can leap up, head the ball into the back of the net. If you're looking for a replacement for John Brooks, there he is. Not saying I think John Brooks is done and dusted, but if John Brooks is not going to get called back into the national team, then Aaron Long is your man. Or if you're not going to use Miazga, then you can bring back John Brooks and have him paired up with Aaron Long. But your thoughts of Aaron Long, who's actually from the West Coast. Yeah, I think he's from the Pacific Northwest himself. So
yeah, I think he graduated from University of Washington. Well, when I first saw Aaron, he was training with Timbers. And I talked to Jamie Clark about him, who's the head coach at UW. And I asked him what his like three or four word takeaway was with Aaron Long. And he said, he's got a good mentality and he's good with the ball at his feet. And that's most coaches don't always say that about players. You hear words like energy or enthusiasm. But when you're a center back and you're good with the ball at your feet, and you've got a good mentality, you're usually a pretty good player. The thing that strikes me as so positive about Aaron Long is I've heard secondhand that when he was with Timbers, he got kind of verbally picked on by the head coaching staff. And that would have been Caleb Porter and Sean McCauley. And he was kind of shoved out the door. And I think he played USL, right? And then eventually he signed on with Red Bulls too. And then he made his way to Red Bulls. And oh, by the way, the guy that I wanted to be the head coach of the U.S. men's national team saw him and gave him the opportunity based upon his good first touch and his strong mentality and put him on the first team, and that would be Jesse Marsh, wouldn't it? So there's a contrast there between Caleb Porter and Jesse Marsh. Porter basically left the Timbers because he lost the locker room. Jesse Marsh left the Red Bulls because he's a damn good coach. And he's gone to Europe. And he's going to fine-tune it even more.
Yep.
So Aaron Long is a byproduct of having a strong mentality, especially when you go through the kind of stuff that he went through when he first joined the ranks of MLS. Now, saying that, we've not seen him play against consistently high-performing attacking players. He plays the odd ones in Major League Soccer, right? But the majority of the strikers or forwards in Major League Soccer are not 150 million pound players anymore, like they were 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. Right?
Right.
And they're not 20 million pound players from MLS, really. So my concern is his ability to have the capacity and capability to defend tighter and under more stress. And I would say the same thing about Zimmerman. I wouldn't say that about Brooks, and I probably won't say that about Miazga, because he's been playing at a pretty high level in Europe. So, but it's always good for a head coach, Daniel, to have four center backs, right? And if when Brooks is healthy, you've got Brooks, Long, Zimmerman, and Miazga. And that's a good thing. You know, you want to be spoiled for choice as a head coach. From a veteran standpoint, I wouldn't be surprised if Brooks got the call. But, you know, if Aaron Long holds himself well, and I'm not speaking against particularly Panama, the real test is Jamaica, maybe. But the real test is Mexico. How can he hold himself against Mexico, a team that possesses the ball, that 700 passes per game possesses the ball? Does that answer your question?
That's a question mark.
I think
it does.
Yeah.
It really does.
It was a roundabout
No, but I mean, you know, seriously, it does answer the question because, you know, you want to test yourself against the best of this nation, obviously, this confederation, I should say. And we all know that Mexico is the ultimate, the ultimate rival, that basically if they don't equal, they at least are ahead of, and let's be honest, we have to be honest about this. Right now, you know, the FMF is at the moment at a higher level and a more advanced level right now than the U.S. after what happened down in Trinidad. I don't want to say the fallacy, but, you know, the disappointment of not qualifying for the World Cup for the first time since 1986 World Cup that didn't qualify for that. It was 1990 was their first ever qualification in Italy. And then, of course, automatically as the host nation in 94. And then so on and so on and so on until the disappointment that happened in 2 years ago, nearly 2 years ago. You have to say right now, you know, while they are looking solid in this one and they did what they had to do and they were feeling it, they were rolling, the confidence finally came up big for this U.S. men's national team in this Gold Cup. The truth is that there are going to be more bumps in the road. There's going to be more teams they're going to face against, and some of them are going to be high-powered. Some of them are going to be, you know, in the middle somewhere. But obviously, you know, Jamaica has been a team that has shown some ups and downs, probably a little more up than down. Unfortunately, you know, they crashed out of World Cup qualifying before going back into the Gold Cup final 2 years ago. So, you know, Jamaica will still be there to hound them, depending on where they finish. And then, of course, it's the big question mark of, you know, what are you going to do when you're going to take on Mexico, who, as of right now, and we have to be honest about it, Mexico is, at the moment, ahead of the U.S. men's national team. And until they prove themselves even further in this tournament, and they've still have, you can definitely say there's a quarterfinal match ready to go for them. The truth is, Mexico is ahead of them at this point in time, and there's no sidestepping that. The U.S. men's national team still has more to go and more to grow on. But until that growth is now established and they are going to requalify for a World Cup, and that will be Qatar, as of right now, the U.S. men's national team are behind Mexico, and that's just the truth.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's one other kind of observation I want to make that is just kind of in general a positive take, I think, is over the last 2 to 3 years, I think we're seeing a few, maybe 2 or 3 soccer pundits in this country that are beginning to pull back the curtain and talk about the fact that the U.S. was not a really good team, and they're still not a really good team, and they're still not at a level where they can compete against the very best countries in the world. And I want to take my hat off to those 2 or 3 people. And in particular, one of them is Taylor Twellman. I'm really pleased to see him step out, because people like Stu Holden, who has the microphone in front of him for 90 minutes every single game over the last probably 4 or 5 games or more. And the reality of what we should see versus what we do see isn't coming across. So I want to take my hat off to Taylor Twell in particular for voicing specific concerns about how at times the U.S. men's national team really isn't a good team yet.
No, I do. I mean, look, Taylor Twellman definitely cares about our program with the U.S. men's national team, with the game as a whole, the U.S. women's national team. It just goes to show you why, you know, he puts his own name out on the line every single broadcast on MLS for the U.S. men's national team, whether it's a friendly, whether it's, World Cup qualifying, World Cup, if ESPN ever gets the World Cup again. And, you know, I think Stu Holden does a good job as well. But Taylor Twellman, and nothing against Stu Holden does a great job. And you know, once in a while, you know, Stu needs
nice
to. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, look, I mean, I have to admit, I wasn't happy. But I just want to throw this out there. I don't know if you saw my tweets or not during the friendly against Venezuela, but, you know, Stu Holden said when the U.S. was down 3-0 to Venezuela in the friendly over in Cincinnati, he said that, you know, well, you're losing to a team in Venezuela that has never qualified for a World Cup. And, you know, that phrase, you know, well, you're losing to a team that has never qualified for a World Cup, that phrase does not hold water anymore, Chris. And the reason is really simple. You tell me where the United States is, you know, allowed to go into World Cup qualifying in the semifinal round, which is basically the third or fourth round before you get to the hexagonal, to the hex,
yeah,
which is the final round of qualifying, whereas you have Venezuela facing every single cycle, every single cycle from start to finish. And it doesn't matter if it's under 17 qualifying for CONMEBOL. It doesn't matter if it's under 20 qualifying for CONMEBOL to get to these FIFA World Cups that are either for the under 17 group, the under 20 group, the Olympic qualifying for CONMEBOL. You're seeing the clubs that represent all those nations in CONMEBOL in South America. I mean, I don't see a Venezuelan side winning a Copa Libertadores or a Copa Sudamericana. You know, I don't even see Venezuela, you know, qualifying out of a World Cup year or cycle. Because why? Because every single year and every single cycle, every single 4-year World Cup cycle, Venezuela has to put up with the likes of an Argentina, with the likes of a Brazil, with the likes of a Colombia, with an Ecuador, with an Uruguay, with a Chile and Peru. And even though Bolivia has not done well either, and the only good thing about Bolivia is that, you know, they have the greatest home field advantage because of La Paz being so horribly, you know, decimating your opponents because of the altitude that their home stadium is played on and the mountain that it's played on. Why do you think Bolivia tries to gain advantage every home game? Because why? Because they are used to the conditions that they play at on La Paz. So that's what the thing that really ticked me off is that if you are saying, well, Venezuela hasn't qualified for a World Cup. No, that's not the reason why they – why? Because that's why they stink? No. Venezuela creates now, besides the baseball players that Venezuela creates, and we know that Venezuela is baseball mad. I know this. There's many Venezuelans in Major League Baseball right now, whether it be for the Seattle Mariners, they got a couple. Johan Santana, of course, is from Venezuela. He played for the Minnesota Twins. He played for the New York Mets. You know, there are Venezuelans that can play baseball very well. And yes, for Venezuela, that is their number one sport. It is baseball. Even though soccer, football is getting better over there, they're creating better players now that are playing not just in MLS, but of course in they're going to Europe as well. Obviously, they have one playing for Newcastle. I forgot his name already. Rondon, I think it is. That phrase does not hold water anymore. It doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
You have to know where you're playing your qualifying games for the World Cup and your national team games, whether it's the Copa America tournament or just a friendly, because once again, Venezuela has so many giants that they have to slay that, okay, you beat Uruguay, but then you lose to Brazil, and then it's all over.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Daniel, that's a great example of, okay, if you're looking for a Captain Obvious comment that doesn't require deeper thinking, right, that doesn't tell a deeper story, Stu Holden gives you that. He gives you the surface. And soccer is as much as it's played on a pitch. Soccer is not about the surface. I can't stress, and I just don't think most coaches get it. 97% of a game that a player plays, they play without the ball at their feet. And they average 13,000 to 15,000 decisions a game. And if you only average 70 touches a game, which most midfielders, well, I would certainly say probably fullbacks and midfielders are going to, maybe some center backs. That's just 70 or 80 decisions that you have with the ball once you receive the ball. And it's where do you pass it, right?
Right.
Or where do you turn it, or where do you dribble it? So, that's a mere fraction of the number of decisions that a player makes without the ball, and I see it time and again, and I hear it time and again, that they tell the story of what you see. I would wish more people would watch the game that's played by the players without the ball. Where do they move without the ball? When do they move without the ball? Why do they move without the ball? And I'm kind of thinking that Berhalter is going to do that a little bit more. Based on the tactics I saw today versus the tactics I saw 4 days ago. I think we're going to get that. But nothing irks me more than an overhype that this is a redemption game. It's like John Strong said it within 5 seconds. And John's a nice guy. I mean, he got his start here in Portland. But he's telling a story that's just not true, you know? It's not a redemption game. This is a new game.
No, it's not.
That last game was a World Cup failure.
That's right.
And those journalists, those broadcasters, they have as much responsibility to tell the story beneath the surface as coaches do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I absolutely agree with you. And unfortunately, Chris, that's the end of our show. And we'll definitely have Carter Kushner on Wednesday night to join us for the final group stage of World Cup qualifying. And before we go, I just want to say this. Congratulations to Curaçao. Of course, the country formerly known as Netherlands Antilles. A 1-0 victory over Honduras that eliminated them from the group stage. So we'll see what Curaçao will do in their final group stage match. But a huge win for that island nation over a Central American power that, no matter how wonderfully talented players they have, sadly, they always find a way to botch it up when it matters the most, and that's in big tournaments like the World Cup or the Gold Cup itself. But, Chris, I'll talk to you again on Wednesday. We'll have Kardec with us on Wednesday, and I'll talk to you soon, my friend, and you have a good night.
Okay. Thank you, Daniel. Take care.
Thank you. Take care. And once again, for the coach, Chris Gluck, I'm Daniel Feuerstein. This has been the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show, USA Gold Cup postgame show. Pardon me, they defeat Trinidad and Tobago by a final of 6-0, 10-plus, nil against. They're going to take on Panama this coming Wednesday over at Children's Mercy Park in Kansas City, Kansas, at the home of Sporting Kansas City. Have a good night. So long. Take care. And join me this coming Monday as we have post-match show of the USA Women's World Cup, USA versus Spain. It should be exciting and a lot of fun. Take care. So long. And bye-bye for now.